A little something different in this episode of Fuckin' with Carl Gaida. I have a special guest, Neil Bengen from WanderingDesk.com. If you listened to episode 3, that episode was inspired by a conversation with Neil. In this episode, we talk about mostly fulfillment and can you be fulfilled as a non-believer. We also go into some other things. I reveal some things later in the show that I haven't revealed necessarily in public before. So, enjoy. That just came up, and I just added it to this kind of this idea file right now. Not right now, but like 30 minutes ago, just before you got here. This thing kind of comes up fairly often in the atheist communities, and on Reddit, this guy asked, or mentioned, or stated, let me click the. The full kind of question. Oh, so it's basically just atheism is unfulfilling to me. And then he has this long story about, you know, leaving religion and all that stuff. I actually didn't read this whole story. It's just that statement is a common, first off, I think it's a common misconception from theists that think that, you know, you can't have a fulfilling life if you don't believe in a kind of higher power. But it also, I feel like, happens a lot of times when somebody leaves the whole support group of a religion, and then all of a sudden they're left with nothing, and they're expecting, like, because atheism is nothing more, right, than a lack of a belief in a God, and it's, so there's no organization to go to have this, like, this group to there's no group to help you to have this social circle, and that's I think one of the best things that religion does do, but I think it's also used as a crutch where you have that support group and you can have it anywhere. Like if you move across the country to a different country, you can still find that support group. Whereas if you're a non-believer, where do you go to find that besides kind of yourself or maybe Reddit, you know, the internet, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean. Okay, so I think, yeah, so it's a bit like Toastmasters International or something, or...
maybe it would be a good place to go. That's...
I suppose there's... or TEDx, which has this sort of, you know, element to it, I suppose. But isn't this something that the humanism movement sets out to do, to offer that sort of support? I know what you're talking about. You can go anywhere and you can sort of... meet a group of people and say, oh, come, you know, welcome, join us, or whatever else. I personally haven't missed that. I find it very easy to just talk to people anyway, so maybe that's why. Yeah. I find it very easy when I go to a new place and fun to go about building a new sort of network of friends.
I think part of that is you're not shy and you're extroverted in a way, right? Would you say?
According to one of those Facebook tests, I'm an ambivert, and I consider an extremely reliable source.
Everybody is.
That's right, yeah. It's a Barnum statement, isn't it? It's like, you know, you like to be out and you like to spend time with other people and whatever, but you also like to spend time on your own. It's like a horoscope.
We don't have to try to distinguish between introvert and extrovert, but just like a shy person, for example, would have a much more difficult time with that whole thing.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not just talking about my own experiences here. I mean, that's what,
because you can be an extrovert and still be shy, right? Like you can kind of need a community and not be able to get it,
lack the confidence to do it or whatever it is. Even then, I'm not fully up on the definition of shy, I suppose. You know, I know it's the kind of thing where
I would almost say like socially anxious, like having, you know, being afraid to kind of talk to random people, being afraid to put yourself kind of out in the open or kind of be vulnerable in front of strangers, but also even just people you know.
Sure. And I can understand that. I mean, I was in a bar the other night in Warsaw, didn't know anyone at all, and I stood at the bar and I had that sense of, I'd have liked to have been in a conversation with someone, and also I didn't have the requisite energy levels where I just felt like walking up and talking to people.
Yeah.
So I get that. So what was the original
thing?
I
guess the bigger question is, can you be fulfilled without being religious? Can life have fulfillment without religion? And I would almost say this is specifically about religion, not even just a belief in a god, but the religion. But I guess we can go either way. But is it possible? I mean, is it possible to be fulfilled as an atheist?
Obviously, I'm not really a good person to answer that, because I'm a sort of a hollow, dried out husk of a man, and I don't really know what it is to be fulfilled.
But and so
I can imagine being fulfilled.
You bring up a great point, because I think part of the problem with people who have this specific issue, like this guy again, I'm looking at his statement, atheism is very unfulfilling to me. Well, the atheism isn't the problem. The lack of a belief in a god isn't the problem. The problem is you're looking for something that you kind of won't necessarily find, because, well, what are you looking for, first of all? But you're looking for something that maybe... I think maybe you had in a very, I want to say fake way, a very shallow maybe way, right? Like maybe you weren't fulfilled before either. You just didn't have space to really feel that feeling. You know, you didn't have the space to even think about it.
Yeah, I suppose it depends what is fulfillment to an individual. What do they need to feel fulfilled, and how do you go about finding that? I've got some friends in Romania, lovely people, very kindly offered to put me up for, it was a while ago now, so I can't remember how long it was for, maybe a couple of weeks or something, or certainly over a week. And they're very religious, Christian, and part of a Christian community, and they welcomed me in, and I could see, even aside from the religious aspects, there was a great appeal to the community aspect. It was really nice.
Yeah.
So I could, you know, I can certainly see that. I felt that in other places.
Of course.
I think it probably is, you know, even just aside from the religious side of things, I can definitely see why that's nice, having exactly that sort of instant community wherever you go. At the same time, I've known small groups of people, of Christians and whatever, who haven't been very welcoming, and it can be just as cliquey as any other group of people, with all of the different sort of sociological issues that go around it, where you know, you have little subgroups, you have power structures and all that, because at the end of the day, it's just a bunch of human beings. I think there've certainly been times when I have, you know, I think religion does fulfill certain purposes, but I'm not sure that is one of them.
Yeah.
One of the ones that, I mean, it can do on its own. You know, I think one of the great things about religion is the ability to sort of the sense of relaxation that can come from giving power to passing off responsibility for, I'm not expressing this very well. You know, when I was in my early teens, I was religious. I was a Christian, and I really, there was something about, very comforting about a sense of some kind of greater power, and being able to sort of, it made me feel like I could breathe easy, because there was some up there who genuinely cared about me, and I could, doesn't matter what I did,
thing
would always love me.
Comfort based on false pretenses.
Perhaps, you know, it's one of these things. I want to be sort of, I don't want to be like too hardline and be rude to other people who have beliefs and stuff like that. And in fact, actually, in that particular community, there was a certain amount of tension, in the sense that every now and then someone would try and proselytize. When I was with these friends in Romania, every
yeah.
now and then someone would try and proselytize to me. It was like, well, That was when it got awkward, was when the religion bit sort of came into it. The other sort of aspects were great. I know. So, but that, you know, we're talking about religion as a comforter there.
But to be honest, that's kind of what I get from whenever I see these kind of posts or these kind of complaints, if you will, about the unfulfillment of non-belief. It's really not. It's almost they're using fulfillment as an analog for comfort. I feel like that is actually the issue, and it's more because again, what is fulfillment? If you're not fulfilled. I mean, how could it have anything to do with your lack of religion or your religion, right? That it has more to do with what you're spending your days doing, I would say. Like, if you're spending your days doing the things that you want to be doing, you're probably generally fulfilled in most aspects of your life, right?
Right, okay. So, I mean, let's take that because I think that's a good point. Religion, if you're religious and then the goal or function of your place within that religious structure is to serve God, to be the kind of person that you have been told is good, in inverted commas, whatever the, you know, the scriptures you read say this is the kind of person you should be, or whatever your sort of religious leaders say that you should be, then you can feel a fulfillment, I imagine, from striving towards. It's a long time ago now for me, but I can remember that, you know, striving to be a better person based on those, you know, to follow the sort of the teachings on a Sunday anyway. I'd forgotten it by Monday, you know. But I think with, you know, when I look at what I do now, well, I have different aims, and those aims are about, they're still about me. And I feel fulfilled when I'm doing the things that I think I should be doing in life, which is, yeah, if I feel I'm making progress and creating the works that I want to be creating, writing works, if I'm doing that, then I feel fulfilled. And if I'm not, then I don't. But I think if I was a Christian, I think I would, I don't think I'd, you don't stop doing everything and just pray all the time, do you? You're actually doing something in your life.
Unless you're a nun.
unless you're a nun. I suppose we'd call these people outliers, would we? I don't mean that. Is there any nuns listening?
Not in a city like this.
Disrespect to nuns.
Not in a city like this where you see nuns walking around.
We're not on a bell curve. They're not in the central bulge, are they? So I would say...
You know what's weird for me? So I grew up kind of in the Catholic Church. So I was always... I didn't know nuns were mostly just kind of a Catholic thing. I thought it was all Christian religions had... Or denominations had nuns, and so like a friend was here in Poland, and she was like, "It's the first time I ever saw a nun. Like, you didn't ever see one in the U.S. because where I grew up, we went to a Catholic church, so I saw them all the time, right? And I didn't realize they were a unique thing. But anyway, that's an aside that has nothing to do with anything.
On this point, can I just say that despite the fact that I'd say I think I'm relatively socially capable. Nuns strike terror into me because I'm not quite sure. I don't know how to deal with them. You know, how do you greet a nun?
You may not look them in the eye. You may not.
Do you know what I mean? I don't know what the rules are. Can you touch a nun? I don't know if I can prod a nun in the arm. I mean, but do you shake hands? Do you bow? Do you have a title that you? Do you know what I mean? Because you're not allowed to touch royalty. Is one of the things. Yeah. Again, it's like, that's one of the things.
You're not allowed to touch royalty.
Apparently not. But
I didn't grow up with royalty. So, yeah.
Well, there you go. It was very difficult upbringing, to be honest, not being able to touch all those royal people around me.
I'm pretty sure you can shake a nun's hand.
You can shake a nun's hand.
I'm pretty sure you can. I'm trying to think back to like in going to catechism and stuff, going to church, whatever, and if we ever shook hands with nuns, to be honest, now that I'm thinking about it, maybe not. Maybe...
You'd probably never.
I don't know if you can.
It's one of these things where it might not even cross your mind to do it.
Maybe they're not allowed to touch you, but you're allowed.
Is that like, one
maybe
way?
Maybe if you initiate the handshake, maybe they'll shake your hand. But I don't know, man. That's a damn good question. I'll have to ask when I'm on the streets tomorrow. May I shake your hand?
But you see, this is the other, and this is the side, because a lot of what you hear about nuns is based on, or certainly things I've heard. I've probably heard more about nuns from, you know, almost from people who don't know anything about nuns, and from jokes and things
like this
that are based on ideas. Which are things like you'll get certain types of nuns who they can't speak. They're taking a vow of silence or mm-hmm. something like that. They can only say so many words every however many years.
Interesting.
And then in which case you don't really want to, if you initiate a conversation with them, that's not going to work out.
You wasted all their words.
Wasted all their words.
For the year.
How does that feel?
Their word quota was wasted on you.
Yeah.
Oh,
and it was just a dumb question. It was like, can I shake your hand?
Or where's,
see, where's
the Shapka?
Where's the Shapka? Yeah.
Shapka is a local 7-Eleven type place.
So I feel terrified, and also there's a strange thing where you have expectations perhaps of, I say you, I mean are you in the general sense, but I guess what I'm really saying is me. I have an expectation of nun-like behaviour, which I think again is probably just based on looking devout and walking around praying and whatever, counting beads and
which I mean is generally, as far as I've observed, which is a very shitty observation, but I mean that's generally the life. It's a life of prayer, and you know they go to the store, they go to the shops because they need to eat. But you know, in general, you if you go over to like the Ostrov Tumski, the Cathedral Island area, you know they're just hanging around outside the church or hanging around inside the church, right? Like they're I feel like that is the nun-like behavior of generally just being in the church.
But then I've witnessed another kind of nun-like behavior, which was brand new to me. And the first time you see it, when you're used to all these sort of things, it's really, it's almost jarring in almost a comical way, because you can't quite believe that this is what nuns do, which is, I've seen nuns walking around eating
that,
ice
cream. Nun porn wasn't a real nun, so that nun.
Are you kidding me? Well, that's, to be honest, it was the realism that.
Anyway, sorry. I broke your train of thought. So.
Yeah. So nuns with, I've seen a pair of nuns with each with an ice cream.
Yeah, of course.
Actually, we both together witnessed saw a nun on a bicycle.
Yeah.
I went walking.
They can have cell phones too. They're not. They're not like anti-technology. It's not like Amish.
Okay.
At least here. I mean, at least in the Catholic Church in Wrocław specifically. I mean, I've seen them doing all of those type of things.
I've seen nuns hiking.
They're allowed to use the public transport. Yeah, I've seen nuns hiking. But okay, so I've seen nuns hiking in when we were kind of in a mountainous area in Poland. But they were hiking up to the church at the top of the mountain, because that was like a common hike. So I don't know if that counts.
So I think based on that. So there is some element, albeit ill-defined by our lack of knowledge, of some kind of devout stoic nature to that as a pursuit, and that we know that can be fulfilling. I'm sure that's something you've spoken to me about before, of deliberately not having something just for the sake of not having it. You know, what would you call that?
Yeah, I mean, so,
I know this
in the way I've kind of, I guess, thought about it or done it is usually in a short-term type of way, where like, can I have fun, for example, can I have fun out at a club or a bar or whatever without drinking alcohol? And can I do that sustainably? Or, so am I on the right track with what you were saying as far as kind of the, what you were getting at? Or
I'm not sure. I think what I'm saying is that there can be a fulfillment to deliberately going out of your way and successfully living a devout life. You're aiming to live your life in a certain way. This goes back to what we were saying before. You've got a set of beliefs, wherever they've come from, in this case something religious, and your aim is to be, for instance, if you're a nun, to live your life in a certain way, non-frivolous,
devout way.
And if you successfully do that, then that's going to be fulfilling, isn't it?
I don't know. So from my perspective, I think it would be fulfilling if you had designed it. Like, that, because you created that thing, but you're doing it based on somebody else telling you that's how you need to live. And I don't think, I mean, to be honest, when I when I see the nuns around town, I'm like, oh, man, you just threw away your whole life. That's my thought, because it's I mean, to be honest, you can become a nun later in life too, I believe, right? So maybe they didn't throw away their whole lives.
But I mean, can I turn that back though and say that, you know, this is the same thing that a lot of religious people think about non-religious people.
Maybe.
I mean, it is the same thing, isn't it? And we don't.
But it's
really
different.
Know
most religious people aren't nuns. They're living normal lives, just like me and you. Whatever. They're not depriving themselves of life, really.
Sure. I suppose. I mean, the field we're plowing at the moment,
sure,
is like
another non porn joke.
Well, I have no idea what you're talking about there, just to make that clear.
I'm just trying to make you look bad. Okay?
Thank you. I appreciate that. So
anything I can do.
The stuff we're talking about there is really, we're not really answering the question. I know I've led us down that path, but this is like, can religion be satisfying? Yes, of course it can be. That can be a thing that you can choose to follow, and it can be absolutely satisfying. And I totally get why people do that. And I have seen people who are tremendously happy, and then, you know, I'm never very keen on, when you hear hardline atheists who would like the idea of like nobody being religious, thinking, well, why is the truth so fetishized when if someone's happy, and you believe they are living in ignorance, that's your firm belief, and you believe you have evidence to back that up.
Yeah.
But you believe they're living in a bubble that they are unaware of. What kind of a sadistic person would want to pop that bubble, assuming that you were right? So I think there's that sort of thing. When I see people who are happy and they believe in God,
I wanted to bite and say, well, I would, but no. I mean, to be honest, no, I wouldn't. That's actually a common, I think, complaint from theists. Like, why are you trying to burst our bubble? Type of thing. But I don't think anybody's trying to burst any bubbles. They're just, to be honest, in a lot of ways, I think a lot of the community wants to make sure that people who don't actually want to be in that community and were just taught it and raised in it, make them kind of realize that, oh, there is something else, and you don't have to do this. Because to be honest, I mean, we come from much more privileged places where we know we can do that, right? But a lot of people aren't raised in those kind of communities where they feel like, oh, I can just leave this because I don't believe in it, but I'm only in it because I'm kind of being forced to, you know what I mean? So, not forced to, but I mean, I, in some ways forced to, of course, like quite literally, but, you know, even just like, I guess it's unimportant. That's a whole other aside and conversation, but you know, I totally think you can, of course, be fulfilled as in religion or non-religion. The point with the I guess the joke with the nuns of, you know, man, you've wasted your life is because they've taken it to, I mean, they've not experienced so many things, and yeah, of course, from their perspective, they've made the sacrifice and they feel good about that sacrifice. So my feeling on that doesn't matter. It's just my own, you know, I guess, stupid feeling, right? But at the same time, it still makes me feel that, like, ah, oh, you've wasted your life. And I know, of course, they don't feel, and I don't want them to stop wasting their lives because whatever, but, and I know they don't feel like they're wasting their lives, so that's, you know, from their perspective, it feels fine. But, I don't know, sometimes I wonder, you know, once you've kind of dug your heels into something, it makes it much more difficult to step out, right?
Is it so, dove or divin? I was just thinking, man.
Divin, I've never heard that word.
To dive, past into dive.
Divin. I think you can. I think divin. You can also say dived.
I've dived, but I
think that's much less common.
So yeah, I hear what you're saying. I think
let's get Grammar Girl on the case. No,
There is the problem, of course, of trying to live someone else's life for them. You can think, well, that wouldn't be a satisfying life for me, and I can't imagine that. I don't understand how they can be fulfilled if they are not you know, traveling the world and writing books, for instance, which just happen to be the things that I like.
So, if they
were to stop being a nun at some point, if they were to come out of that and say, oh my God, I've wasted my life, that's one thing. But if they were to look back and say, well, actually, that suited my purpose for a period in my life.
Of course.
Whatever, you know, I could do that. I could stop being a writer and say, my God, I've wasted all that time, all those hours of my life being a writer.
Yeah, I mean, I do that all the time, but the point is, I do that. Like, I feel fine with that freedom to, you know, I can leave any kind of situation. I studied computer science. I was going to be a computer programmer for the rest of my life, and I quit that while I was pretty much still in university. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
I should have quit it sooner, to be honest. But that's neither here nor there. I think that freedom is, you know, makes it easier. I don't think it's a perfect analogy, but I mean, anyway, I think, of course, they think they're living fulfilling lives, and that's fine. That's you know, it's as long as they feel like they're doing the right thing, I think that's important. But I mean, for them anyway, right? Specifically talking about nuns again, not religious people in general.
I think if I was a Christian and I was a writer and doing these things, I think if I wasn't writing the works that I wanted to write, if I wasn't producing the art, because that's where I get my, that's where it comes from for me, that's where my fulfillment comes from. Fulfillment for me, if I'm being productive, I'm being effective and efficient, and I'm producing the work I want to produce, and I feel like I'm living up to making the things that I want to make, then I'm going to feel fulfilled. I think if I was religious, the difference would be that if I wasn't feeling fulfilled, I could take solace and comfort in the fact that there was someone up there who loved me, and that, well, it's all right, because when I die, I'm going to heaven or whatever.
I have more opportunities, right, in the afterlife or something.
Even when I was religious, I didn't see that as I never really knew what goes on afterwards. I didn't have an idea, but I have noticed there can be a thing sometimes with people who are religious, because I noticed it in other people who are friends and things like that, or acquaintances or whatever, who there's almost a sense of, like, if someone's a bit, like, shitty to you or something like that, you could say, well, they're going to hell anyway, you know. There's almost like it's almost like the ultimate, like, I've won anyway, I've won up that person because I'm religious, I'm going to heaven, they're going to hell, screw them. It's a totally different subject, but I think the thing is, like, what lurks within that, the original question, is this idea that if you're religious, then ultimately you are going to be fulfilled.
Mm-hmm.
And then can you or can't you find fulfillment outside of religion? But I think it's possible to be religious and not feel fulfilled.
Of course, I was just about to say, so it kind of makes the assumption that just because you're religious, you're fulfilled. So what would you say if this guy that said this, this was just 17 hours ago, he posted this, atheism is very unfulfilling to me. What if it was like a friend of yours who came to you and he's like, man, Neil, atheism is very unfulfilling to me. I don't know what to do. What do you think? What would you say?
Well, I think there's a lack of information there, isn't there? I'd want to know, why specifically atheism? Is he comparing it? Is it he?
As far as I know.
But is this person comparing atheism to a previous experience of religion or an imagined experience of religion? Why have they said atheism? You know, why haven't they just said, life is not fulfilling to me?
Well, that's in the description, he goes on, lately life feels empty. Anyway, he's like, I feel like life sucks and then you die. It feels like the motto of life to me right now. And it just kind of goes on with kind of that kind of train of thought.
But then, you know, I think that...
And it's a fucked up thought from the beginning. Life sucks and then you die, right? Like, there's already a problem which has nothing to do with religion or non-religion, right? So
I think there's a fundamental truth there that is one of the reasons why atheism, or just generally not being religious, or agnosticism, or whatever term you want to come to to describe or self-identify as, I think... when you're going down that path, that's one of those things that's really that is difficult to deal with. And I think, again, that comes down to the comforting nature of religion. There's that really good humanist video which Stephen Fry narrates, where he sort of touches on that theme about...
I'm not sure if I remember seeing it.
It's on YouTube, so yeah. It's out there. And
I'll include it in the show notes.
It's something where you do get comfort. It's hard to accept the idea that you just have one life and then you die and that's it. It's a really, really difficult fundamental truth that every single human being, we all have to sort of come to terms with.
Yeah.
And I think the notion that when you die it isn't the end is very comforting. And I think if you to be comfortable as an atheist or non-believer or whatever you want to say, that a person like that has to be comfortable with these hard truths.
Yeah.
And they're not easy truths. No, you know, we can't even imagine. We can't conceptually imagine what it's like not to exist. It's one of these things when you hear about someone.
What are you talking about? I remember my life before I was born.
Were you? It's interesting that people remember lives before they're born. I imagine you were a member of the monarchy or something.
Of course.
You were some kind of prince or you were a. No one's ever like a smelly, sort of, I don't know, hut dwelling.
A mongoose.
An animal. I didn't think about that. A mongoose. I think fundamentally, if you believe that there is no God, then you're going to have you've got to come to terms with that.
Mm-hmm.
And even aside from whether or not a God or the God or whatever exists, if you've chosen that path, you have to be able to come to terms with that difficult, conceptual idea. How do you come to terms with that?
Yeah.
And I think
I don't know if you have to completely come to terms with, and some kind of. I don't think you have to come to terms with it on like. I'm losing my train of thought, but I understand it's like a big thing, but for whatever reason, for me it's not like, okay, when I die that's it, and on some days that's motivating, on some days that's not, you know, but in general I don't feel like you necessarily have to come to terms with that. I don't care if, to be honest, I don't care if there is something after we die. Obviously, I don't believe there is, because it's to me it's ridiculous. Obviously, well, not obviously, but it is. but it doesn't matter. It's whether there is or there isn't. It's not going to be what this life is, and so therefore, might as well try to make this one. The kind of life I want, you know what I mean? So whether it's good or not, I mean, obviously, many days suck, and so I guess empathize with this guy who says life sucks and then you die. I mean, I get that. I mean, but if you're approaching a problem from that frame of mind, life sucks until and then you die, you're kind of approaching it, I think, in a very, you're not going to find, I think, what you're looking for. You're not going to find fulfillment if you've already decided that life sucks and then you die. You know what I'm saying? You're not going to find any kind of joy in that.
But it almost sounds like if you're not happy, I think if you're happy and you're doing the things you want to do in life, then I think you tend to think about these questions a bit less. I mean, this is like existential angst.
This person didn't put how old they are, and I'm wondering, but
it's obviously this is part of a great long tradition of European cinema, entire films of people, angst-ridden people.
I'm not familiar.
I've never seen any.
I'm not familiar with European cinema.
This is almost one of the reasons why people turn to philosophy. I understand people turning to religion from that perspective, because they feel like there's something missing and they can't believe that this is all there is. And
yeah.
I get that.
Did you see the article recently? I think it was in the Washington. It was in the Guardian or the Washington Post about we should teach our children philosophy. Like children should learn not like the dense. Kind of boring kind of stuff that you learn when you take a philosophy class in university or whatever, which God, I took one of those. Like, I love philosophy, but that class was so just dense and not interesting that it wasn't interesting. But I think the article kind of stated it from just a frame of mind of asking questions and having conversations, you know. And did you see that article? It was going around I think a week ago or so.
I didn't see that. I miss a lot of things, you know. What I tend to get, and it probably tells you a lot about the kind of company I keep, or at least the kind of things that Facebook notices that I click on, because then it starts hiding the other stuff. You see, this
what do you use for news? Just Facebook friends? Which is a good way, to be honest, just getting news from friends, too. Another echo chamber.
This was the thing I was going to say, which is that, so, you know, there was that one, this is the thing, I don't even remember the name of the character in this meme. It was a meme which was like, don't be like, is it Bob? There's a meme recently, and it was like a stick man. It was like...
The rapper?
No, this guy did a meme, and it was stick. It was a stick man.
Because you said Bob, it's B.O.B. is a rapper that was...
Okay.
It's also short for
Robert.
He thinks it's flat earth.
Oh, he does.
He's that guy with...
He was like, don't be like such and such. You know, you've seen this. Don't be like... insert name here. Anybody listening who knows this,
this is painful.
They're shouting it out now. For God's sake, it's
louder.
So I had a character sort of like that. And the point is that it's not really stuck very well in my mind anyway, because I never saw any of the originals. All I ever see is the Guardian articles about how annoying this is, or like the BBC or whatever else. You know, people commenting on it and other people sharing the parody memes and things like this, and I never see the original memes for whatever reason. The kind of people whose stuff I read, these are not the kind of people who share these memes. So all I ever see is I find out about a meme by reading about other people's annoyed responses to how they keep seeing this meme. That's how I find out about memes. Although I do have a friend who shares a lot of cat videos, which I'm very grateful, my source of catspiration.
I just go to Reddit.com/aww.
Okay. Oh, really? I've never been.
It's all animal stuff. And so they have to be cute, or else it wouldn't be under.
Have to be cute. That's it. Essentially, it's St. Paul at the gate, isn't it? It's like, if you're not cute, you're not coming in. You know what I mean? It's like, it's quite judgmental.
Well, I mean, that's how those
ugly animals this way. Ugly animals who can't do some.
That's how popularity works, man. That's how Reddit works.
It's a cruel world. Imagine being a cat that's not cute, doesn't spontaneously start walking on its hind legs.
There's never been a cat who hasn't been cute, first off. So.
Now, there's a challenge. imagine how the existential angst of one of those beings. Imagine a cat that knows it's never going to be in a cat video.
Whew, that's
tough.
Rough.
It's a tough life.
It's a rough thing to even think about as a human.
It is. So what would you say is... What is fulfilling? What do you find fulfilling, Carol Guider?
Now I feel so under pressure that you use my full name. It's like when you're in trouble as a kid and your parents call you by your full name. For me, I think it goes back to, it's almost the wrong question, because... I mean, it is, obviously, it's doing the shit I want to do.
Are you telling me I have...
No, you know what I mean? Like, approaching it from the wrong kind of angle. No, it's a fine question, of course.
Can I just cut in at this point and say Bill? I've Googled it and it's Bill.
Bill, fuck Bill.
Be like Bill. Don't be like Bill. Which, yeah. Anyway.
I'm not familiar with it.
You didn't even get the response?
No, none
of it.
To be honest, I think I've talked about this before. Like, I've deleted almost... So basically, my Facebook friends now are people either I'm actually friends with, or people I'm kind of acquaintances with who I think are very interesting. And so I've deleted hundreds of people over the past, I guess, year or two, where now I don't see much stuff in my Facebook feed anymore, because not everybody posts every day, right? So it's first off, when you have a smaller list, it's easier to kind of understand what's going on with people's lives, because there's only, you have a smaller smaller group to pay attention to. But no, so I mean I don't get a lot of anybody who ever kind of posts those memes, I unfollow them, so I don't even see them in my feed. So I don't get memes in my Facebook feed anymore. I think probably I'm the only person who posts them. No, I'm just...
Do I? So, I took you away on a tangent. I asked you a question, then took you away on a tangent.
Yeah, yeah. So fulfillment. I mean, for me, it's lately I'm not at all fulfilled with the shit I'm doing. So, I mean, I know generally that's temporary, but
do you think that atheism might be the problem?
I think it is. I think it is. Yeah. No, you know, like I mean, we've talked about this many times before of how I don't want to be here. And pure being.
You mean Wrocław rather than the face of
being,
the earth?
Being Poland. Yeah, right, exactly. But no, it's as far as. And so it's very. And just in general, like the stuff I've been working on for. I mean, I always change kind of the main thing I'm working on, but I've never really worked on any one thing over my lifetime, which, I mean, okay, it's short, I guess you could say, but I've never focused on one thing. And so I've wondered if there's some issue with me there. Like I start doing something, it starts doing well, and then I quit and do something else. And I've often thought, like, some people look at that and like, oh, that's amazing that you're able to do that. But I look at it like, you know, I don't know if it's so amazing. It's amazing that I'm always able to kind of bounce back, kind of, from my perspective. But the fact that I always have to start from zero with things, I don't think is a positive. I don't think that's positive, you know, like to constantly have that that stress, that anxiety of, oh shit, well, I quit that whole thing, and now I got to start over. You know, it's fun. And so I'm wondering, basically. And no, this is a very long way to answer this question because there's no real answer to the question from me, I think. But so what I'm wondering is, like, first off, is there something wrong with me that I constantly do that? And if there isn't, why do I constantly do that anyway? You know what I mean? Does that make sense at all?
I mean, in a more general sense, rather than just your own pursuit of happiness, what would you say, what is it to be fulfilled?
And I think even just the pursuit of happiness is bullshit anyway. I mean, that's not a... I think that's a rabbit hole that a lot of people, including me, but I think a lot of people get stuck in that doesn't really go anywhere good.
Yeah, I must admit, I don't know if you saw this other sort of meme-like, shareable kind of challenge thing, which was I think it was 100 days of happiness or something like mm-hmm. that, and you had to be happy at some point every day and then share that moment. And I remember, and I think we've spoken about this before, I remember thinking that this was such an ill, you know, it was the idea was nice, mm-hmm. I got it, and I saw people doing it, and yeah. I'm sure they successfully did it for as long as they wanted to, whatever. I must admit to actually actively unfollowing all the people that did it because I found it so grating. It was just basically that, you know, that whole Facebook, my life's great. It was that on steroids.
Yeah, yeah.
But also the thing is, I think it's a flawed idea in general, because what if you're someone who does intermittently suffer with depression, low mood and stuff like that? It just shines a spotlight on the fact that you're not happy at a given point. If you have to go out and find happiness, I don't think you can do that. You can focus on the process, but you can't force yourself to have the results. Yeah. So I think you can, like, the one example is, I know you made an app of this, which is the gratitude thing.
Yeah.
Something that
I was going to mention that. Not the app, but just the idea of that.
Right. 100. If someone did it 100 days of gratitude, well, I think that's great. And it's an idea I share, and it's an idea I'd even think about doing myself. I mean, it's actually scientifically proven that gratitude on a daily basis is something which, I'm not sure what basis or what interval, but...
I was going to say, I think the studies on that are not conclusive,
aren't they?
I mean, I know I used them, I think, in the first when I was talking about the app. Richard Wiseman talks a lot about pop culture, not scientifically proven stuff, and he's very good. I love Richard Wiseman, but he talks about a lot of stuff that, you know, has 10 people in the study.
Okay,
you know? So he doesn't. But I know what you're saying, and so what I was going to say is, with the happiness thing, I think gratitude could be a good analog for that. And I think somebody who does like 100 days of happiness is almost doing 100 days of gratitude. I think my issue, and maybe this is your issue too, is the fact that you had a lot of people doing it and you had to see it every day, and it's not really helpful, except like, so from my perspective, like when I would do like a daily gratitude thing, it was just for myself. It was like to remember to take time, and like even if things are shitty, as somebody who does deal with like depression and self-loathing and other bullshit like that, to take time out of the day and like force yourself to have some kind of gratitude for something, because there's always something. I mean, I don't think obviously that equates to happiness necessarily, but I think in a kind of 100-day challenge like that, I could see kind of using them both interchangeably, you know?
Right.
Because even if you're not happy, I think you could still find something to be grateful for.
Yes, and that was my point, which is that you might not be happy. Let's say if you're going through, someone going through a period of long depression might not be able to do. I know depression isn't the opposite of happiness. That's
right,
not how
right.
it works.
That's, yeah.
It's more like the opposite of having energy, or you know, the different ways of yeah. describing it. But
well, we can misconstrue or mislabel and misdefine depression, because everybody else does anyway.
Okay. Oh, good. Oh, good.
Usually,
you.
People who have never had it and don't understand it. It's like,
yeah,
oh, just be
right.
happy.
That's right. Depression is just when you're just lazy, it's, basically,
yeah.
isn't it? That's what that is.
Oh, you mean you're sad?
Yeah,
oh,
you're sad.
Sorry.
Here's some kittens.
Yeah.
Oh, you fixed my depression. Why don't you just? Anyone who says why don't you just to anyone who's suffering from something chronic and has had that for a long time, it's just, you know. Why don't they just stop
yeah.
for a moment and think that maybe the person has thought of this already? But that comes down to the whole free advice thing, which is a
yeah.
different subject. One thing I want to say is, you were talking about, and it's a very frivolous aside, you were talking about free...
I'm very frivolous.
Excellent.
Perfect.
We'll go this way. You're talking about frivolous... No, blah. Can I just repeat? I'm just saying the same words now. I'm turning into that man, that guy who repeats things. So... the thing you're talking about with philosophy classes, I mean, there are a lot of things that I think would be really great to be taught in school that
yeah.
are outside of so much of education is
very rote memorization.
Right, and it's almost sort of, the intention is that these are like stepping stones for you going into work or something like that, and not necessarily preparatory for life.
Mm-hmm.
You could argue some basic maths and things is useful in shopping and things like that, and basic science is good for just not looking like an idiot in the pub and saying, why is it that it goes dark at night and things like that.
Well, time goes in, time out.
You can't explain that, Carl. I only pose that to you because I can't explain that either.
Nobody
no
can
one's,
so
no one's having that.
Don't worry about it.
So well, I had an idea, and if you're listening and you do this, then you can do this. You can totally have this idea. I just made up on the break. I was about
you're,
to say
you're
you can't
giving
do
people
this.
An idea that they can have.
That they can have. You can have this for free. Free advice.
It's not their idea anymore.
Here's, well, if you say it's your idea, I'll be upset, but I can't pin anything to you. But I was thinking about the idea of a hairdresser. Where the hairdressers are also trained philosophers.
Okay.
Because you know when you go to a hairdresser...
So you don't have shitty conversations at the hairdresser?
Right, because you know they say like things like, well, you know, so where are you going on holiday? And for you, it might be the first holiday conversation of the day. But for them, it's probably the seventh.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and...
But so
don't
but you
why
think it's,
not?
Don't you think it's almost your job as the person who knows that they're constantly having the same conversation to steer the conversation to something more interesting?
So
well,
I'm
for
paying
yourself.
And I also have to provide
yeah.
quality conversation.
You have to provide
well,
the
I don't think I should pay.
Don't pay then.
Just say, listen, like, well, again, do you expect me to provide quality conversation? Because if you do, that's fine, but I expect at least a discount.
No, this
at
is
least
the thing. After you get your hair done, hair did... You go. You,
yeah.
She tells you, okay, that's 50 zloty or 50 quid or whatever it is. You say, well, I already paid you with my delightful entertainment and conversation, so
bye.
You're welcome.
But what I was thinking is they can add value. Hairdresser can add value and make you more likely to choose them as
yeah.
your hairdresser choice.
Well, of course.
If they could say, if they were trained not only how to cut hair, but also... How to say, well, you know, so you start cutting your hair and you're saying like the usual, how long is it since you've had a cut? 4 weeks, okay. And you want the back naturally? Yeah, okay. And you start working away and you go snip, 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 snip. And then, so how many different...
I agree, hairdressers would make more money if they understood basic kind of psychology in conversation and have better conversation skills.
I'm not saying that. Well, if they were saying, like, you know,
it's kind of like
they're sipping away and they say, so, how many different kinds of love would you say there are? And then they just.
Yeah, you were going a different way than I was going.
Well, absolutely. I mean, you know, but that's what I'm saying. So then, and then like you sit and you say, well, I don't know. And you'd say, well, one, isn't there just one? They say, well, and they know how to prompt you. You know, they've had this before. They know the different paths this can take. They've studied it. And they'd say, well, would you say, for instance, is like familial love the same as romantic love? And well, obviously that's going to prompt a no, isn't it? You know, so no, actually it's not. It's completely different. So, well, so there's at least two then. Well, yeah, there are at least two. Are there any other kinds? I mean, would you feel comfortable going on a date with a friend of a type that you don't find attractive, for instance? Well, no. So, and you could lead them down different avenues there, and then you go away with shorter hair and a new sense of understanding of the world, perhaps.
Wow. Could it be called Voltaire? The Voltaire person?
Well, it could be Socrates with a hair. You could actually pick a hairdresser, and the hairdresser is the Socratic method.
Yes.
Well, they could, the Socratic method is different, isn't it? But if there was like sort of Socratic in the questioning, they could almost like play the fool and make you look stupid. I don't know. That would appeal to some people.
I mean, I don't know how that would do for tips, but yeah, it might work for some people. Masochists of some sort. Intellectual masochists, is that a thing?
Yeah, come away, like, you know, they ask you questions that make you feel like you're not as intelligent as you thought you were.
Oh, okay.
But then you have the problem then of thinking, well,
I feel like every time I have a conversation with anybody.
Well, when you go to the hairdressers, it might be, well, I know that, like, of the hairdresser, I know this particular hairdresser is very good at cutting hair. But this other hairdresser isn't as good at cutting hair, but it's very well educated, well, very informed when it comes to discussing John Locke, for instance.
Interesting.
Or Cartesian philosophy.
I don't know how well that would do for me, because it would be short conversation, first of all, but just with the buzzer, and if I wouldn't even hear what she's saying or he's saying, so it'd be like, what? What?
We had a comedy program back in the early to mid 90s called The Day to Day in the UK, very well known. It's part of it's something very influential in British humour, certainly. And it was parody of television, of news programs and current affairs programs and that kind of thing. Played deadpan.
Okay.
It was actually quite, at the time, I mean, now it's quite normal, but at the time it was quite a brave decision. I seem to remember it not having canned laughter or anything like that. It was completely, you know, you watch it. The first time I saw it, I actually thought, oh, please, please, please let this be like deliberate and humour.
Yeah.
And they had a segment which was in the dentist's chair. Okay. And they actually had Richard Branson in the dentist's chair being asked questions whilst he had a mouthful of swabs and was being, I don't know if you call it operated, but being, you know, having a procedure performed upon his teeth.
Interesting.
So which he obviously clearly couldn't answer the questions.
Interesting.
So I guess maybe a little bit like that. I think hairdressers could perform other tasks. And obviously if you taught philosophy at school, then you're halfway to being a hairdresser, aren't you? So that's the other side.
Some might say. But in that kind of regard, you don't have to stop at hairdressers. I mean, you could go to dentists. Dentists could be philosophers, right? So, I mean, it goes with that.
Taxi drivers like to try and convert you to a certain way of thinking sometimes, don't they? Not all, obviously. I don't want to generalize on that front. I've had a few that have... Okay.
To be honest, I've taken taxis so few times in my life, I could probably count them on one hand. Isn't that weird? Besides, I guess, tuk-tuks.
How many fingers do you have?
25.
But... So, besides... I think tuk-tuks do count.
But they don't count in the fact that you're not going to really have an English conversation with them.
Do you know? Well, do you know? Yeah,
and even if you could have a conversation, they're so fucking loud you can't hear shit.
This is true. They don't. Yeah,
the little motors.
They don't in the tuk tuk with Richard Branson. They don't expect conversation either, do they?
No.
Whereas I think there are some professions in some parts of the world, perhaps, and I mean specifically, for instance, in different parts of the UK, you will get different expectations of what you were going to do as a taxi driver, as a passenger in a taxi. For instance, having spent time living in London, I can tell you that you're not expected to have a conversation, but if you strike up a conversation, then that's fine. And they might, you know, they might strike up a conversation with you as well.
Yeah.
But it doesn't happen all the time. I've had the thing where I've been in a taxi in the north of England, specifically round in the northwest, and I was in the taxi, and one of the people, when we got out to pay, one of the people complained at the fare, you know, maybe, I don't remember the exact situation, maybe we hadn't agreed in advance and it was more than we were expecting for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
The driver said, well, that's what it normally is here. And you didn't even have a conversation with me, which was great, fantastic, that we'd made the social faux pas of not saying how's business?
Yeah.
The taxi driver equivalent. I don't know if it's the same in the USA. Taxi driver equivalent, the hairdresser's like, so where are you going on holiday this year? Is how's business? At which point the taxi driver has to then, will then tell you how, it's quite a meta question. You're talking about the thing that you're doing now.
Yeah.
That would be like asking the hairdresser how the haircut's gone today.
Yeah.
How are the haircuts going today? Oh, fine. How's this one going? Quite awkward, isn't it? You know, it's like that'd be like me asking a friend how if they enjoyed my book. I feel like if they want to volunteer that information,
that's a good thing. Next time you're at the hairdresser, throw that question at him or her. Say, so how do you think this haircut's going right now?
Yeah, is this fulfilling? Do you feel that this is enough for you, or do you need to? Are you considering taking up a religion?
But if you ever hear that question on a date, you know shit's not going well.
Well, I don't know, because
how do you think the state's going?
Well, it's an awkward question to ask in that respect, but I remember Russell Brand talking about this. Somebody asked him about his tips for chatting up women.
Yeah.
And obviously this is someone who has a lot of experience. You actually see him on camera doing this. He's quite happy to flirt, isn't he? And very openly. And he was talking about discussing the process and actually saying something like, you know, how's this chatting up? How would you say this chatting up is going? How's it going? You think, how do you feel about it?
Yeah. I mean, I guess it depends on how you approach the question, right?
It can be quite fun by referencing it. I think it's very playful, but yeah. in the wrong hands, it would.
Yeah.
David Frost doing it. I'm not suggesting David Frost would. Is David Frost still alive?
Dude, I don't even know who David Frost is. So.
David Frost. He's. Can I Google him? Did you know that? I mean, do you remember this thing where Google tried to stop people saying you shouldn't do Google, you should do a Google search?
No.
No. Well, that was something that happened.
They wanted to stop the use of the word becoming a verb?
Yeah. I wonder if that was something. I could be completely wrong here, but I know that there's a thing where, like, when brand names have become part of regular language, you stop being able to protect them as a trademark.
Okay.
So in the UK, I don't know if it applies to Hoover, but in the UK, for instance, like often people say, "Oh, have you Hoovered the lounge or something like that?" And a Hoover is a trademark; it's
really
vacuumed. People who I know, maybe this again, these kind of people who don't share common memes, are also the kind of people who would say, "Have you Hoovered?" rather than "Have you vacuumed?"
Right. This has been copyright law and trademark law with Carl and Neil.
That's right. I think it's really important if you're gonna learn something, it's important to learn it from people who know nothing about that subject.
That's
all of my information.
That's basically the premise of this whole podcast. So you know, like
talking about subjects on which they're out of their depth.
Come to me to learn about things that I don't even know about.
People who are not theologically well versed talking on the subject of theism.
To be honest, so I had two ideas when I first started this podcast 2 years ago. One of them was to like learn about things. And interview people who I know nothing about, and then we all learn together. But to be honest, that's just too much work. So it's more fun to just opine in public and sometimes I guess look like an idiot and look kind of not well. I was gonna say not well versed in the subjects you're talking about, but in general. If you have an opinion on something, hopefully you're somewhat well versed in the subject, but you don't need it to have an opinion, right? So, in any case, I think, were you going to say something?
I was going to say, You know, I really dislike this phrase, opinions are like arseholes. Have you heard this one?
Yeah, yeah.
Opinions are like arseholes. Everyone's got one.
But they all stink.
And they all stink. You see, is that the second part? I'm not
yeah, yeah.
The
that's,
part. See, that's not...
That's the punchline.
That's the... Whoa, right? It's like a sucker punch, isn't
yeah.
it? Boom. Because it sounds bad enough on its own. But the thing is that people have more than one opinion.
Yeah, yeah.
So that just is not true. It just fails, isn't it?
Shit.
Everyone's not got one. They haven't. If you only had one... I would select my opinion very carefully. I'd probably choose it from a list and I'd have it vetted to make sure that it was accurate. I wouldn't want to just be going around with my one shitty, malformed opinion. And I'd probably think about it quite a lot. I'd probably... It would be like... You know when people have like a...
Like you're only allowed to have truthful ideas in your head or truths in your head except one opinion? Is this what you're saying? Like everything that you think cannot be just thoughts except one. One can be just your own thought. Everything else has to be like I am holding a bottle of
factual
something in my hand right now.
Well, you think you are.
Shit.
I don't mean to be one of those. Do you know, can I just tell you the worst kind of philosophers? If you are one of these, then now I don't apologize if you're being one of the annoying kinds. If you are, like, if you're in your first year, you're in 6 months or a year. I saw an article on this the other day. Someone was on these parody news sites. But if you're one of these people who's like done a year of philosophy,
yeah,
you've done 1 year. You're an undergraduate. You've done a year,
yeah,
and now you're just going around. Was it the Irish parody website? You probably have never seen this because I have some Irish friends who share this. The Waterford News, the Waterford Whisper, or something.
Okay, yeah.
And it was actually picked up on this, and it is true. It's like that when you meet someone who has, not all people like this, confirmation bias on that, obviously, done a single year of philosophy, it's the worst kind of thing. It's the Dunning-Kruger complex, isn't it? Or Dunning-Kruger effect.
Yeah.
You don't know enough about philosophy yet to know how much of an annoying asshole you are when you start telling, when you just assume everyone else is an idiot because you've done a year of philosophy now and you now see the world you're like Neo in the Matrix and you're just standing there seeing all the numbers flow past your eyes. Saying things that people had already kind of worked out for themselves anyway, but now you have a philosopher's name that you can use to put behind that to
yeah.
suggest some kind of learnedness about it, and that you're no longer a participant in life. You're above all those suckers looking down and commenting on the peasants below
well,
you.
Well, so I know what I've just learned. I need to go take 1 year of philosophy.
I know. It sounds great, doesn't it? I know. Not two, though, because that just breaks everything. Fucks it up. And then you can live in that bubble of... You see, that's fulfilling. Right there. That's
living in bubbles.
Living in a bubble. And I think it, do you want me to try and wrap this up now?
Yeah.
I think the most important thing you can do is to try and find some kind of a bubble that you can live in which... Yeah.
In which nobody ever questions you and you never have to... think.
That's right, and that's why we can no longer be friends, Carl, because you're always asking me awkward questions.
And on that note, I think we can we're just over an hour. I think people have heard us speak for long enough.
I think if there's one thing that if the takeaway from this
yeah.
is that we're very good at going round and round in circles without actually answering the question. That's what I got from this.
I got something completely different. So I was just pretending to start going on a new tangent. AKA, or in other words, I was affirming your belief or I was going to. Whoa, see what happens? All right. Well, hey, thanks for listening and yeah. Bye.